Mary Kellauer, and this is the, this week we have been talking together about healing after abuse, and my topic this morning is going to be rituals and healing. We talked a little bit in the last section about helping in the healing process, and we particularly stressed a kind of sense of presence with someone who is healing, and a sense of companionship with that person. And we talked a little bit about kinds of things that one might say that might be helpful, and that verbal interaction is very important. But this morning I want to move us, although we didn't get through all kinds of things you might do to be helpful, this morning I want to look at another component of the healing process, which is at a sort of deep, non-verbal level, although we'll be looking at some words. But aside from the fact that we are people in relationship with others who talk and use language and have ideas, human beings are also symbolic beings. We are people who live also out of deep images and symbols in our lives. Last week, when I did a session on feminist theology, we ended the week by talking about rituals and symbols. And much of 20th century theology has stressed that human beings are symbolic animals, unlike some of those earlier definitions that said human beings are rational animals, you know, because we can do philosophy. 20th century people have stressed much more that we are symbolic animals and that symbols reach deep into our spirit or into our being and touch levels of us that just words or just ideas don't always touch. That we are imaginal beings, if you will, as well as rational beings. So as we think about the healing process or as we live our way into it, we need also to be aware that there is a deep symbolic level of survivors and of the whole community that is touched by traumas of various kinds of abuses, and that recently, as we have worked with healing, people have been concerned also to address some part of the healing process that occurs at that deeper level, the level that is touched when we go to worship on Sunday morning, and we sing, and we move our bodies, and we say certain things, and we take the very tangible elements of the bread and wine, and we say Christ is really present in these, and we share them, and we say Alleluia, and we go through some kinds of movements that lead us in a process that does something with us that's deep inside us. We reenact something, not just talk about it, but we do it. And there are all kinds of very fascinating attempts to work with symbol and imagery with people who have survived various kinds of abuses. And this morning I just want to share with you some examples of things that are occurring, and maybe to call you also to put your own creativity to work where you are, creating some new kinds of rituals and maybe some new kinds of symbols. The piece that I just passed out is the end section of a book that I and two other women edited, Sexual Assault and Abuse, and this is the very last section, which we called Resources for Ritual and Recuperation, because there's a part of us that's refreshed and sort of given new life and energy in this symbolic level that goes on when we're in touch with some healing symbols and rituals. So if you don't mind, I would like just to have us enact or read together some of the litanies and rituals that are here. And we're going to begin these in some, I guess we'll sort of look at a kind of spectrum of options here, from some that are maybe more familiar to us or that start in a familiar place. And we'll look at some that have that sort of stretch a little further away from conventional. I'm not sure if I can remember which order these come in here because I didn't write numbers by them this morning. But let's, if you don't mind, would you mind turning to, well, let's start right on page, and where is their page number here? They're stuck over in, on mine or under the staple on this copy. If you just turn the page over, we see it says litany, psalms, and songs. And would you mind reading together with me a litany of confession? This is, no, they have gone somewhere around. Do we have some extra copies? Mind sharing with someone here? There we go. Thank you. This is a confession for a whole community that has become aware that there are issues like sexual assault out there in the society, and in which the community is aware that it has inside itself some people who have been touched directly by the traumas of sexual assault and abuse, and some of us who have been touched indirectly by these issues. In the Rape Crisis Movement, we talk about direct victim survivors, and we talk also about secondary victims or secondary survivors, who are those who love or know someone who is a direct victim and who also are harmed by the assault that happens. So those persons also need part of the healing process, as I think so does the whole community in which we have these kinds of wounds occurring. So this is a good communal ritual, and it just goes down to the end of the page here. I will be the leader, if you don't mind, and I'll ask you to read the part of the people here. So let us confess together. We confess that we have failed to love ourselves.
We remember that we have looked on our own bodies with dislike and distrust. We have denied our own feelings. We have confused assault with flattery.
We confess our failure to touch each other with love.
We remember the trap of secrecy that kept us from sharing our fear and pain. We remember that we believe violence could only happen to other women. We remember that we believed we were responsible for running rape and then disrespecting those who were raped.
We confess that we have put our trust in men.
We remember that we have denied ourselves freedoms in order to buy male protection. We believe ourselves to be helpless. We have not trusted in our own strength and potential.
And at this point in the ritual, you see that you might be invited to share our own confessions. I think we'll just spend a moment of silence for people to think about what kinds of things we might want to confess about various kinds of abuse.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
In this line right here,
yeah.
We remember that we believe we were responsible. Should it be we were not responsible?
Well, that is a very good question. Is that what you learned? Is that what you grew up with, the sense that you were not responsible?
Well, I meant along with the rest of the statement.
Uh-huh.
Now, this means that we believe that we, as that people, thought women were responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it does say two things. Remember that we can't think of it in a way. She's pointing out that we as a community aren't responsible for trying to prevent rape. We didn't care.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point, and actually it's something that you might want to think about as you work with creating these sorts of litanies, to try them out on a body of people and hear how they sound. It sort of does put a stop to the ritual process when you're not clear about what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up at that point and spoke to that, because if you're doing something like this in your congregation or in a body, you don't want to have the process come to a stop suddenly because someone just clicked right out, not understanding what they were saying. That's a good point. I think that it does mean that we were victims. Felt like we were the ones who were supposed to stop this process. Why did you let this happen to you? Sometimes we say to victims, why were you there in the first place? Why did you dress that way?
Which we don't do to robbery victims.
Absolutely.
Say, why did you dress that way?
Or why were you carrying a big purse?
Yeah.
Why did you have all that money in your wallet?
What came out?
So I think that that is the sort of self-blame that the sentence, as it's written, is meant to say. Yes?
My good friend is about 40, and she's molested by her father for a long time. And she just tells me about it a little bit once in a while. And she has two sisters who were not. They absolutely either refused or they were stronger. And, you know, she feels some weakness in her that this happened to her and not to her sister.
Was she the oldest?
Yeah. Younger.
Yes, that sometimes occurs in family violence, that someone is singled out either as the scapegoat, like one child may be beaten upon, or some of the youngsters will be sexually abused and not others, although there are other cases in which everyone is systematically abused. And it's a very interesting dynamic. It's hard for people in that case not to blame themselves for someone having contributed or having been more weak. And interestingly, sometimes the persons in the family who were not victimized feel guilt because they were not. Because someone else was singled out as the...
I just thought this might apply to that too. We were... prevented.
Shall we just finish off this ritual? Let us share our confessions of needs.
We need to be healed of our pain and sorrow. We need to be touched with love and with the truth. We need to trust our bodies. We need to affirm our feelings, believe in our anger, trust in our loving kindness. We need to break the locks we have placed on our hearts. We are ready now to live without our shells.
Probably if you were doing this particular litany as a part of a larger piece, you might want to insert after this something like a statement of absolution, either by the community to itself. You know, that might say something like, we now declare ourselves healed of our pain and sorrow. We declare ourselves ready to trust our bodies, something that might complete this sort of statement of confession. There's another affirmation on the next page, if you wouldn't mind just turning right over. A very short little affirmation of faith right at the top here by a woman named Julia Peebles. Shall we just try this one also? We trust that beyond the absence,
there is a presence.
That beyond the pain,
there can be healing.
That beyond the brokenness,
there can be wholeness.
That beyond the hurting,
there may be forgiveness.
That beyond the silence,
there may be the word.
That through the word,
there may be understanding.
That
through understanding, there is love.
It's a sort of nice, very short piece that sort of speaks to not just a confession any longer, but using a litany form as an affirmation that beyond this pain there is something more, that we affirm this as a matter. Those creeds that we often have in the longer worship are affirmations of faith in a sense, and it's a sort of wonderful sense here of affirming that I believe healing is there. Any reactions or other responses to these first two?
I have a reaction that I'm not so sure relates to your topic, but I'd just like to say it and maybe have some conversation about it. Recently, I was at a pastor's workshop, and the lecturer made reference to the forgiveness, the confession of forgiveness and absolution. And one of the women there who worked in a rape crisis center spoke up immediately and said, couldn't we do something about this confession because it does not serve well, women especially, because it only talks about sins of commission and a receiving of forgiveness. It does not speak to those who have been victims. It does not speak to those who are feeling alienated and need reconciliation. I'm wondering if in a new hymnal, which I'm sure is already being worked on, there can't be a real initiative taken by women in the church to make sure that there are some alternatives more than what we have in our in
good.
All of our services.
That's
I really think these are fine. I'd like to try them out in my services.
That's a good point, Carol. And as I remember growing up with the old black book, those of you who are Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an old red book, right, before the new green book. And one of the earlier confessions that we used to use all the time in my tradition was the one that said, I have sinned by my fault, by my own fault, by my own most grievous fault. And I think after this time together, you don't need to imagine very far what that does to someone who has been victimized by sexual assault or abuse and feels
guilty
and feels like it really was their fault. And that sort of confession beat down further.
One more. I guess I would not like, I mean, that's an ancient litany of the church.
Yes,
and
it
part
is.
Of me says, I don't want to lose that because there's a place for it. But
yes.
But every Sunday is like beat them down again.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be every Sunday.
Uh-huh, and it was every Sunday.
Did you want to
speak up? Too early. Now, I grew up on a red book, and then SDH has, we confess that by nature we are sinful and unclean, and that I have sinned against
me. Yes.
Now, that gave me a very, very, very strong message.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and if you had your period while you said it, wow.
I forgot which of those versions of earlier Lutheran worship said, I confess secret thoughts and desires, which I do not fully understand, but which are all known to thee. And I remember that I always thought that the secret thoughts and desires were sexual. Right. Never occurred to me.
You mean they weren't?
Well, it never occurred to me that it might apply to the fact that I was greedily coveting something that I couldn't have, or that I didn't want to share my money with someone else. Right? I mean, we've sort of thought at various contexts. Well, I'd be very interested if anyone did think that it meant that I harbored in my heart secret feelings of superiority to black people because my skin was white.
Yeah.
That's one of those that I sort of wondered what if we took this and used it in a learning context,
yes.
It might be a different thing to say that confession, but just to do it like that, I had the impression that 99% of the people there thought it was sex we were talking about. Did you want to add?
Well, the problem that I have with this litany is that the women who are the victims are having to take the responsibility to do the healing of these relationships, restore the wholeness, do the forgiving, do the understanding, and bringing this this love again.
I've been having a lot of difficulty with the pressure to forgive for those people who've been in codependent situations where the path of forgiveness was a lot of a cycle that perpetuated their codependence. And so for me, the freeing to allow the expression and the feeling of anger and hurt and the right to say, these are the boundaries that I need to have, that for me, that hasn't really been there. I mean, I have to just, you know, in faith go, well, it should be there. But it's not been there in the liturgies and things.
It would be wonderful to write something that would express that sense of
it. Let's do it today.
Want to have a small group that would like to sit down and write something like that? Would you like to help with that, girl?
That's a real struggle. That's a real struggle, and I think it's something that often happens. My daughter had something happen to her where she was struck by an adult male pastor during communion. And
I know what it sounds.
It is absolutely awful. But what her youth leader took her aside and emphasized forgiveness immediately, that she must forgive this man. And what she learned from the experience after working it through when she got home from the retreat and got into our kitchen and just burst into tears. And what she worked through with our own pastor and with with a pastoral counselor was that that kind of forgiveness isn't forgiveness. That's not forgiveness.
What is it?
Well, what she learned was that they needed to talk about the anger, talk about what happened. They needed to process all of that before she could begin to say to herself, I understand, where you're coming from, but she needed to be very, very angry first.
What I think
she needed other folks to be able to say to her, you're right.
Absolutely.
And you were right to feel very angry at your youth leader for insisting that you sit down and pray for everyone to be forgiven just then. And that's too often what the church does to people who've been victimized, who've been offended, who've had a violent experience, is to say, we need to pray.
We should.
And that experience for me is something like papering over the problem with forgiveness.
Yeah,
and I think that we maybe do that because we're sort of scared that if we had to live in those moments of being real angry and other things, what might happen? It might get out of control or something. Mm-hmm. Those people might have to be held accountable. They might have to change.
Yeah.
There's some shame with that too, because partly shame that she can't just turn her feelings around, and partly shame that it happened in the first place, possibly. She shouldn't have been angry about that.
It was a real interesting process experience, and one of the less nice kids in a youth group during the course of that afternoon apparently wanted to get everybody together and beat up the pastor. Which is an honest response.
The right response.
Yeah.
I wanted to speak.
Yeah, I've been through that process of being raised in a horrible family situation. And you get to a point, because you're taught all the time, just forgive him and love him because the reason he does is he loves you or whatever, and that kind of thing, and all that bizarre thing. When you finally do go through the anger and all that kind of thing, there does come a time for forgiveness. There does come a time of letting go and saying, realizing that they're part of a process too, and letting go of that, because otherwise you just beat yourself for the rest of your life too. That forgiveness doesn't come immediately. There's a long process, but there is a forgiveness, and that heals me a lot more than it heals my father. But it does. Otherwise, I abuse myself long after.
I think that's very important to say, and that it's important to say that it's the end of the process and not the beginning of the process. I think I just want to add one little footnote there, which is to say that for some victims or survivors affirm very strongly that they don't need to forgive.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you define.
That's real important to set those things, that it comes out of the middle of your unique process, that need to find that place of forgiveness or not, and that both of those things happen. Did you want to speak?
I was going to say, I think somewhere you need to clarify too of what you're forgiving and who you're forgiving. I guess that was the thing with the living that I found real helpful, is it begins to clarify where my own problem is in it. And not that I caused the abuse, but that, I've done damage to myself since the abuse as well. And that, I think to be real clear of who I'm forgiving and for what.
Oh, yes, that's good.
And I was going to say, the one resource, Matthew and Dennis Linnett, in a wonderful book called Healing Life Hurts, which talks about forgiveness as a process. It's not something I do now and it's over with, but talks about forgiveness in a process very similar to the grief process, which is very neat book.
Someone over here wanted to add, or I think you?
It's partly understanding what forgiveness is, and I think sometimes as Lutheran Christians we have a really warped idea of what that word means.
What do you think it is?
Well, in thinking about my mother and how she processed that particular incident, I think to begin with, she thought that forgiveness, and she's, a 16-year-old Lutheran brought up in the church, I think she thought forgiveness meant somehow not remembering or acknowledging the hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think we get that from the idea of wiping the slate clean.
Uh-huh.
And part of it is how we see God saying, I will not remember your transgressions.
Yes.
And she needed, as a human being, instead to remember and continue to acknowledge that what the person who offended her did was wrong. And she needed the community and her parents to support that and to provide some sanctions for that person and some, in a loving sort of way, to work with that person
But it was not just to say, well, we'll pray about it and forgive, and then we'll forget.
Right.
It's all over.
How did you handle it with your husband?
I cried. I just cried.
How far did you carry it?
Did he give a motive? Did he say why?
Did you ever talk to him?
Yes.
Did you talk?
Yeah. I don't know if we do the one. This is maybe.
I couldn't imagine what his motive was.
He said that his sense of this was a youth retreat. This man is a Lutheran pastor. He was there as one of the youth leaders. He's a person with very heavy control needs, and I believe that he's a person with a level of violence in his own personality, things that he hasn't dealt with. The children were having a communion their last day, and he said that his sense of, guys, okay, Terry might think about it. His sense of personal sanctity of the communion service was violated because my daughter and her 16-year-old friend were tittering back and forth to each other. Now, whether or not that was appropriate is not the point, but he turned from elevating the bread and slapped her.
Does the bishop know?
Yes, I believe he does.
Good. Yes, he should.
What you're saying, especially about...
He slapped her so hard that he slapped her right on the leg. So hard that when she got home 5 hours later, she had a big welt.
Mm. What you're saying about forgiving is not forgetting, I think, is real important. Do you want to? You haven't spoken.
I wanted to share something on that. My daughter went riding at 15 with another girl. The other girl was homosexual, and she had invited her. And my daughter had been in Lutheran school up till this time, and I don't think knew what homosexual was. Well, anyway, the girl sideswiped the truck, and my daughter was thrown out and killed, and the other girl wasn't hurt. The girl was driving. And the girl, my husband's a minister, the girl came to my husband right away, for counseling, came to our home, so on and so on. But I remember it was years and years later, I would tell people, well, I have forgiven, but boy, I haven't forgotten. Mm-hmm. And it was many, many years later, I finally wrote her a note and told her I really forgive her. But now in this interim, I told my husband I didn't want to see her, you know, right away. Mm-hmm. She came over to our house right away. He said, if you don't see her now, you may not get another chance. So I went through the role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was in and out of our house all the time for 6 months. And then I said, well, I just can't spend so much time with you. And I think even though you can't forgive with your heart, you can go through the role if you have to.
What do you think, what was that like for you to go through the role?
Well, I did other things, healing things, like I started a little children's choir. And I was active. I think probably my family suffered emotionally from it, my strong emotions. But still there.
But it must have helped this girl tremendously that you were even going through the role, don't you suppose? She needed that badly.
Many years later, just recently, she has, what do they call it when they put you to sleep she's gone through that.
Hypnosis?
She's gone through that, and she was just so anxious to tell us what she found out, but we haven't seen her since. But she was developing such severe migraine headaches, she was not able to function. She even went through getting a master's degree at Wittenberg after this. Then she went through and got an attorney's degree because she wanted to sue the school board that wouldn't let her teach, because she went into a job as a teacher, as a counselor at this school, and one of her first things was to tell her secretary that she was bisexual. Well, the school wouldn't give her any business. So she proceeded to get an attorney's degree and sued them.
It would be fun if sometime in your acquaintance with this person you might ask her if it helped her that you were going through the motions of forgiveness,
yes,
rather than to make up your mind yourself about that. And I just want to suggest that there are times in survivors' processes when it feels important to go through the motions about it, and then there are other times when it feels like that was the worst thing I could have done for myself. Mm-hmm. that was really part of the trauma and the denial rather than part of the healing. So I want to just be clear that we're not necessarily going to recommend that every time, to go through the motions if you don't feel it.
But, but the person didn't know you were going through the motions, right?
Well, we don't know that part. Mm-hmm. She might have had a feeling in the back of her mind that this was not sincere.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
or she might have been grateful.
She went, came to my husband for counseling for a long time, and she wanted him to yell at her to do something. She wanted some kind of violent reaction. But he's a very quiet, for him to have been violent probably would have torn him up more than he could take.
Can I just ask if we, this is a very wonderful, important discussion about forgiveness, and it's something we could spend some more weeks on here, I think, because it maybe depends on what we think, in a positive sense, forgiveness might amount to. Here, that's, I think, a sort of a hard question about what forgiveness really is.
And assuming responsibility that was by rights what the abuser should have been responsible for, not me. So I'm real cautious now, and I have an inner battle. As I, you know, the one side of me says, well, I should be forgiving because I want to forgive. I want to let it go. On the other part of me is going, now, wait a minute. You know, there's also that feeling that the abuser needs to come to the consciousness that they bear some responsibility.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, I think it helps to make a differentiation, too, between when you work through something like that and you're forgiving another person and what they may have done to you. Whenever someone has done something wrong against us, it's my reaction to it that I'm responsible for. Now, I'm not talking about anger, expressing pain and all that, because I think that's part of the healing process. But as it continues on and on through my life, I think God holds me responsible if the anger turns to hate or whatever. Then I think, because sin begets sin, and who hasn't had something happen to them in our world? Where we live in a world of broken people, and it may be degrees of violence or whatever, but I think we can become agents for healing and forgiveness by forgiving someone else and leaving the other person in God's hands. He's well able to convict them of the situation of what they need to do, but then it frees us up to become healed and to become whole again. But if we harbor the anger forever, it does a lot of destruction to our own spiritual life, to ourselves physically. You know, that it's not good in the long run. And God holds me responsible for my reaction.
Mm-hmm. Let's think a little bit about what it means to harbor the anger forever and how long is appropriate to harbor the anger.
That's what I respond to, and that is that what I was saying was that as a result of the abuse that I'm talking about, there are some necessary sanctions. And I go through an inner battle of feeling guilty that I have to impose the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also want to affirm forgiveness, mm-hmm. and that's very difficult.
Did you want to add?
Well, I think there's a difference between harboring anger in the process of going through that anger. You're not harboring it. You know, you're sort of expressing it. It seems like the denial is actually more harboring, even if it's at a subconscious level.
How many of us think anger is a sin?
Go with your gut.
Okay. That's real interesting, isn't it? Huh? Where do we get this one, that anger is a sin?
I think anger can become sin.
Because you were talking about anger becoming hatred.
What do you do with the
What do you do with years of unresolved anger? Nothing ever stays static, I don't think. It grows one direction or another.
I need to tell you that I'm sort of not capable of facilitating a discussion about anger here.
Well,
I see that people are passionately interested in this. You haven't spoken yet.
Okay. I think too much was expected of you to sort of have that girl right there in your house. I think, I mean, I haven't been abused or anything, but to forgive somebody, I think you have to first go through the anger, and that's sort of like a grieving process, and then you heal. But I think what they expected of you was too much.
I need to risk trying my own clarification that when we get into the big swimming pool talking about forgiveness, I think we're getting a little bit away from at least what I saw as the direction. And we need to realize that there is a difference in the grieving and the need for forgiving when there has been an accident of some sort. Something terrible happened. We've lost someone. There were other people involved. But they did not necessarily intentionally visit evil upon our loved one or upon ourselves. But yet we harbor the same feelings of anger and some guilt and some the need to forgive that person who was in some way involved with the tragedy that happened, as opposed to, I think what we started talking about, is if someone intentionally visited evil upon you, let's call it evil with a capital E, they raped you, they assaulted you, or in a secondary sense, a person very close to you, it was definitely evil. It was not, they didn't slip off the road in a car accident. And that line gets real, real hard to go, because what if the person was drunk? What if we didn't care for them in some way, and we felt that somehow that led down the road which caused the accident or the drowning or whatever. But there is a difference. There is a difference between that intentional person who raped you, who assaulted you, who was visited evil upon you personally.
It would be very interesting to see about writing a variety of kinds of confessions of forgiveness and what kinds of things we want to be forgiven for and what an absolution of that might look like. You know, what it would, and I really would like to encourage you to use all the creativity and experimentation that you're capable of to look at this, because I think that the church is in a large crisis about what forgiveness means in this context. And that for us Lutherans especially, who've put so much theological weight on forgiveness, we really need to spend 20 or 30 years experimenting and finding out the nuances and what the power, what theological, spiritual power we need to lay a hold of on this. I want to just... And let me suggest that it would be fun to look at a couple of other dimensions of ritualizing here before our time goes by. Is that okay with you? I always hate to do egotism things here, but I wrote a wonderful litany on the next it's called A Celebration of Solidarity on the left, and we'll read the part that's a litany of the word on the right. This litany grows out of the story of Matthew 25, which is this last story Jesus tells on the way to the crucifixion, the last of many stories he tells the disciples when they go apart. It's the story of the last judgment, when the people are all gathered there and God separates them into the ones on the left and the ones on the right and says, these are getting into the kingdom and these are not. And they say, oh, why is that? And the first several lines of this litany are the lines that Jesus says in the story. And then I have added to them, I have done variations on the theme of what Jesus was talking about there, I think. And it's a very different, these are words in the mouth of the great king who is the judge. And as you perhaps remember, at the end of the story, when the people say, when were you hungry and we didn't give you bread, and when did we see you in prison and not come to you? And Jesus says, insofar as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. And the litany really comes out of my experience of counseling with survivors and realizing that when I looked into the eyes of the person I was talking to, I saw God peeping back at me in their gaze, and I wanted some way to express that sense that in the least of these, we experience God's presence. I think we divide here and say that this is congregation left, and this will be congregation right, and we'll read it as a litany. It goes on to the next page, and we'll have to turn the page in the middle, okay? Congregation, we start with right, I guess, here. I was hungry, and you gave me bread. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison.